coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome in. It is Old School here on The Ticket. Austin Orman and Jay Foreman with you as always. Jay, a happy Thursday to you and yours. I am back. Yesterday was not a mirage.
That's all right. I can get used to this. You back in effect.
Full effect.
Yeah.
Official. As you would say, back like Return of the Jedi.
Yes, sir.
Great movie. My son has a Star Wars block book. We're going through it right now.
The original one?
You
have the new one with the...
Well, it does all of them. It goes pretty chronological.
Okay, so it's got it all. That's good.
So I'm trying to be a good dad. Teach my kid back like Return of the Jedi. Not coming back to Lincoln anytime soon, Wisconsin men's basketball. After the utter annihilation at the hands of Nebraska last night. First of all, big thanks to the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Appreciate them and everything they do for us here on the show. Jay, 90-60. Nebraska takes down Wisconsin.
Yeah, that was a beatdown.
From start to finish, essentially. Yeah. Wisconsin led it 13-9 at the U-16, the first break of the game. Nebraska crawled back in front. This was a 37-31 game with about 3.5 minutes to go in the first half. And then Nebraska goes on a 10-0 kill shot run to stretch it to 16. And Wisconsin only got it back within, I think, 13 at one point in the second half on the way to a Nebraska run. Yeah. Let's start with this, Jay. When you look at this game, what did we learn about Nebraska last night?
They got a little bit of killer instinct. I think they have multiple options. Obviously, playing at home the last two games is obviously works to their advantage. But they're able. They have a little bit. I don't know. I guess you call savvy a little bit. You know, right now as the season sits, some it factor in the sense that you're able to validate. A good play, and you have a little bit of. You put the dagger in the heart, and it's. They are able to adjust and figure some things out. They started kind of slow where Wisconsin was able to kind of, knife their way through the multiple defensive schemes that they were trying to do or coverages that they were trying to execute. They weren't executing them very well. And then I think the first timeout, I don't know if it's under 16 or whatever, then they came right back out and then they started to get busy.
That killer instinct was one of the two things that stood out to me because Nebraska hadn't shown that in its other high major or notable games. Against Oklahoma, they get down big early and good for them. They found a way to crawl back in and ultimately win that game up in Sioux Falls. New Mexico, Nebraska's up double digits at half, played a stellar, final 16 minutes of the first half. And then the lead evaporates down to just a possession or two before Nebraska put the Lobos back at arm's length. Kansas State, Nebraska got up by double digits and couldn't quite put that game away. Came down to the last seconds, and Nebraska holds on to win. But, Jay, I think that starting with Creighton, a team that Nebraska was clearly superior to, Nebraska really took care of business at home against what's still a quad three opponent. And then against Wisconsin, a team that's better than Creighton, that's given Nebraska fits before, but Nebraska said it after the game as well. It's what you do, right? This is the expectation, is that you take care of home in the Big Ten. The killer instinct to me, Jay, came from Nebraska really meeting the moment, right? I think when you think about Fred Hoiberg, you think of even keel. You think of, don't want to get too high, don't want to get too low. You think about staying steady. And I can really appreciate that in teams and in coaches. But I do think that I'm starting to come around to the idea that maybe that's better in the big picture, and you can't let being a steady program hold you back from riding the wave. Because that was one of the best environments I have been in sports last night from the tip. That crowd was charged up from the get-go, even before the game. It filled in pretty early, and I think part of that, sure, comes from a 21-point beatdown at Creighton. Fans are excited about this Nebraska men's basketball team. But even just from the players' standpoint, it looked to me like a team that had taken its coach's message to heart to move on from Creighton, that recognized the sense of urgency in a game like Wisconsin, Big Ten opener, looking to win it for the first time since 2018. You're a ranked team for the first time since 2017-18. And Nebraska played with a sense of urgency, you know, befitting a Big Ten opener, befitting a ranked team hosting an unranked opponent. And I think part of that was because Nebraska didn't necessarily try to just stay steady, or at the very least, they had players that knew how to harness or use that energy, right? Bear K. Buechtengel is getting a lot of run for his bloody lip, and the performance that he had last night, deservedly so. Braden Frager had some moments, especially early on in that one. Jay, I was so impressed last night with the emotional maturity of this team, not just in staying steady when, you know, calls weren't going their way and it was a back and forth game early, but the emotional maturity to not be afraid to ride that wave of positive emotion, but not go too far and capsize the boat.
Yeah, I mean, they were able to, deal with one of the biggest, I guess, crutches around here in all the sports is dealing with success. And, everybody thinks, you got the highs of the highs and, can you get back to reality? So that, I think it really, it's a good snapshot and look into, some of the leadership that they have from their senior players and mm-hmm. the maturity of their other players. I think Jamarcus Lawrence coming back, obviously with Sam and the other guys, and obviously Rink Mass, I think you're getting a little bit more even-keeled. Not that the guys last year, really could, and I think there were some internal factors that they had to get over, and I think they remedied that. And, look, it's onward, upward. I think they have a really, gettable schedule. They got a big game here coming Saturday, I think, at Illinois, which is obviously going to be hard just because you're going to get the same treatment then as you gave Wisconsin last night. Illinois, you have Illinois' attention, so that's what you should want. Mm-hmm. It should bring out the best in you. And so, I think last night, obviously, the crowd was probably an extension from the Creighton game. Obviously, you want to get there and see if and when they do it again, and obviously they did. So you expect that moving forward. Now they just got to get back to work or rest or whatever, because essentially now it's already Friday. As far as your competitive clock goes, you got to get it somewhat of a good practice and hop on the plane and go there and ready to battle, because it's a quick turnaround. I mean, when you play Wednesday night, it's essentially Thursday. Thursday is kind of rest, recovery, probably look at some tape. Obviously you see what you needed to do well, especially early in the game, and that's got to be the focus. And then you got to try to hone in on a very, very good program in Illinois here in 48 hours.
Yeah, then you travel tomorrow and you're playing Saturday afternoon, right, in a top 23 matchup. Yeah. Number 13 Illinois and number 23 Nebraska. Kupsker says, I really thought Wisconsin was going to continue to dink and dunk down low. That was the kryptonite for Nebraska in the first half. Jay, Greg Gard wasn't really mad after the game. He had that disappointed dad look, right? He had the thing with your dad and his glasses, yeah, right? That's kind of how I picture Greg Gard in the locker room. He just sounded a little deflated in the post-game speech, talking about his team's lack of defensive identity. No one wants to play it. So much talk about the offense. And that Wisconsin really went to hero ball, went to iso ball, went away from what was working, which was then followed up by Fred Hoiberg saying, yeah, they maybe did a little bit, but he credited his team, and Greg Gard did too, but Fred Hoiberg credited Nebraska for having better hand activity, for getting more deflections. Zero in the first 8 minutes. They chart that, and that's going to be a problem for Nebraska. But I don't say I have a hard time believing it. I saw it with my own eyes. I watched it back last night and then again today. And it makes sense why Nebraska not just won, but won in dominating fashion. It was just such a foreign...
Hey, y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. And it's not a competition, but like if it was, I would totally win the season with Wayfair. Giant outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments in every style and color, yep, got those on Wayfair. Garland, accent pillows, cozy throws, nutcrackers, Wayfair, Wayfair, Wayfair. When it comes to hosting, Wayfair's got me covered there too. I got a brand new dining table set that fits the whole family, sheets and towels for extra guests, and even the cutest holiday bed sheets for the kiddos, all thanks to Wayfair. And the best part, I got it all shipped fast and free. It's a Wayfair holiday miracle, y'all. I'm not saying there's a champion of Christmas or anything, but if there was, it'd be the lady with the year-round Christmas village who shops at Wayfair. That would be me. For everything festive and just your style, all delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or download the Wayfair app to totally win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home. Fall calls for comfort. Mack Weldon's got essentials designed for cool days and timeless style. Their new Ace line combines comfort with sophisticated looks. Go to MackWeldon.com for 20% off your first order of $125 or more with code MACK25.
Feeling in a foreign game for this Big Ten Conference matchup? Because, yeah, Nebraska's won games in the series before. Nebraska has never really dominated Wisconsin like this. Even when Nebraska's been, you know, just as good as Wisconsin, it's been a tight game where Wisconsin's right. found a way to blow the roof off with threes. That happened last year in Madison. And that's where I think, again, I can bring my emotional intelligence and maturity point into this. Bear Craig Buchtenjell said this was a game that really sat with him all year. The way that Wisconsin played last year, it made it a little more personal for right. Nebraska. They said, no, we're not having that happen again. It's going to be our turn to do this. I kept waiting for Wisconsin to solve something offensively. They never did. Part of that is, okay, Wisconsin's got some stuff to work on. But the other part of that might just be, hey, credit Nebraska. They met the moment, they rose to it, and they sustained it for really, you know, the first 35 minutes of that game until the, you know, the threes and fours got it.
Yeah, I mean, really, I just think Nebraska's the better team. And yeah. it helps when you're definitely, you're focused. And, you know, motivation is just when they come out and they do the pregame stuff. That's motivation. And I think the focus and the discipline, and which made that the discipline last, what you said, you know, 35 plus minutes is a byproduct of, you know, you forgave yourself, but you didn't forget that butt kicking you got up there in Madison. So you wanted to, you know, replicate that and return the favor, and they did it, you know, tenfold. So, you know, look, I think this team right here is obviously right now, as of right now, you got a lot of season left, a lot of basketball to be played. Teams are going to study you. They're going to actually take some of the things that you do well and put it in their system. They're actually going to see what you don't do well and really, really start to hone in on it. So you're going to get everybody's best shot now. Now you have everybody's attention. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to get tougher. And so the things that you have done well on a consistent basis, you have to make sure that you lean on those because even though you might be better than a team or playing better than a team going into a game, whether it's a road game, you know, or a home game, mm-hmm. you got to understand. And when you show up at the arena and at practice, you're going to get everybody's best shot.
There were certainly opportunities for Wisconsin last night. Greg Gard mentioned that I think they got six shots blocked. And that comes down to poor shot decisions. Wisconsin missed a handful of kickouts, both early and late, that could have resulted in open threes. One of them that stands out to me was Stanford's block on John Blackwell. Drove into everyone. He had a wide open guy in the corner. Passing to his dominant hand, he didn't take it. Tried to force the shot. Nebraska forced John Blackwell, you know, last week's Big Ten Player of the Week, into a terrible night. 7 points, 1 of 11 overall, 1 of 6 from 3, 4 of 4 on the free throw line in 35 minutes. Only 3 rebounds and an assist from a really good, you know, borderline all Big Ten caliber type of player. And I think, again, some of that goes to Nebraska made his life hard. Nebraska was active. But also Wisconsin just wasn't at its best last night, and that absolutely goes both ways. I do want to highlight this on the Nebraska end, though, Jay. I've been really impressed with Nebraska's guards and wings finishing through contact. Sam Hoiberg, the last couple of weeks, has had some incredibly acrobatic finishes for and-ones. Cale Jacobson had a key one against Oklahoma and has had another and-one since then, I believe. Frager continues to go up strong through contact. I like Price Sanford finishing at the rim. Again, not maybe the bulkiest guy. DeMarcus Lawrence hasn't gotten downhill and had as many of those opportunities. But when Nebraska's guards and wings drive, I feel a lot better about them going up and finishing through contact than I have Nebraska's posts, really, for the last couple of years. But especially this year, it's been pretty glaring to me the difference between Nebraska's guards finishing at the rim versus Nebraska's posts through contact.
Yeah, that's the same thing that, you know, Tominaga added to his game. You know, the first year where he kind of burst on the scene, it was like, you know, he's bombed from, you know, all over the place, three. Then he added off the ball. He was playing, you know, secondary cuts, and then he finished better around the rim. That's exactly what, you know, Sam and Cale and obviously, you know, Braden Frager has done. And that's what you have to do in order for this offense to work. You have to be efficient, you know, as far as scoring the basketball. And they've raised their level of efficiency, and it's the main reason why you're allowing you know, rank Mass to have his season. And obviously, you know, Sanford and everybody else and Jamarcus Lawrence, when he doesn't even score well, he's able to get at the guys that can in the right spots to where they can be efficient. Mm-hmm. People don't really, one thing they don't really realize, and it's a lot like football. Ball handling isn't just, you know, 45 million dribbles, 18 fakes, and then get back into your third and fourth into your bag. That's the stuff you see on YouTube. It don't mm-hmm. work in but real basketball. Yeah. It don't, at any level. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing it in high school, then you're probably playing against crappy competition, right? But out there, what a good ball handling team is, it's a good passing team, and they have studied it enough, I'd like to think, or Fred has probably made it a point of emphasis, know who you're passing to and what their strengths and weaknesses are and get it to where they can get into their shot zone or their finish zone mm-hmm. or into their on the drive more effectively. That's why this offense is working well. And that's maybe a byproduct of Jamarcus coming back. Maybe he learned that when he went, or was he go to Rhode Island and came back, or maybe he's just more mature and he understands some of the things that Fred wants, or maybe it's just the work they've been able to do over the offseason. But their efficiency and their ball placement is really, really, really good. And that's what you see, actually, if you're going to watch football. You see quarterbacks, they place it mm-hmm. to where the receiver or running back can do something with it.
Yeah.
Everybody just looks for completion and then turn the lights off and like, let's go to the next play. It's the details that they're doing at a high level right now. And those same details will allow them to offset the adjustments that better teams will make against them, you know, in the future, because you can't defense the details in the discipline. Mm-hmm. You can stymie it, but if you're disciplined with the details, they'll come back and work for you in the most pressure-packed moments.
Yeah, I think that's a great comparison from football to basketball and back, because you can get the ball to the right player and still have it be not the right pass or in the right spot, right? That's why completion percentage is an incomplete measure of accuracy. Yeah. Because part of accuracy isn't just, did you get the ball to the player? It's what can he do with it then, right? If you have a guy, you know, open down the sideline with a step on his defender, if he catches it, great. But can you put it that extra, you know, half step out in front of him where he can go get it, doesn't have to slow up and doesn't get tackled? Can you lead your guy away from contact? In basketball, that's, can you lead your guy to the rim? Nebraska did that a number of times last night with cutters. It's, can you hit a guy in a shooting pocket? I don't understand why Nebraska didn't have any transition points. I thought they had at least that three from Price Sanford, but even that's an easy opportunity in transition. Just make the simple kick ahead pass. Getting it to Price Sanford was the right thing to do quickly. But getting it to him, how they got it to him, he hits the three, Nebraska goes back up by 20, and that's 20 assists on the night for Nebraska on their 33 made field goals against just 10 turnovers. Four of those did come from Jamarcus Lawrence. But Jay, he's been pretty incredible. Not necessarily blowing the doors off statistically, but 7 assists last night, played some tough perimeter defense on Blackwell and on Nick Boyd at times last night. Last year's team could have used this Jamarcus Lawrence. I get why he left. I understand what he was going for. I think it's been really good for him. And it was that kind of missing element for Nebraska last year, a secondary creator. Because Jamarcus can score. That's what he was kind of been wired to do. But now that he can kind of split point guard duties, he can play some two, play some combo, but at least be the guy with the ball in his hands to make some of those right reads. I think this is a really great role for Jamarcus Lawrence, who really embraced it his second go-round in Lincoln.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to think of the Oklahoma game, right? Before he didn't score in the first half, and then he hit the back-to-back threes, and he's off to the races for a couple mm-hmm. games. And then this game, he's more of the setup guy, but he leads it with his defense. And so you got to have some self-awareness of where your game is. And he really didn't play that bad. It was only two of seven. But then when you add the 7 assists, and now see you'd like a little bit less in the turnover category, he's able to do some things. So he doesn't need to carry the big load. You got 12 points from Sam, and obviously you got the double digits from the rest, and then Braden Frager had 15. You have a deeper team that's able to, you know, pick it up when a guy's having an off night, and then you're able to get bonus points from Garcia. And so it was definitely a true team effort. And you got as you look at it right now, you got your top 6 guys. You say Frager is one of those, and throw Garcia in there. They keep playing like this, they'll be pretty good in Cale Jacobson. So you go 8 deep, right? And you're able mm-hmm. to maybe like switch some lineups and stuff like that. So these next two games after Illinois is where you're going to really hopefully try to get some more out of. Got my man, we got a Kendall Blue sighting, even though it was late.
He was in there at the U12 in the first half.
Yeah, well, he was
He was out there.
Yeah, he was out there. In
he was running around.
Yeah, yeah, we got to get him going and represent Minnesota. You get him going, you had another guy. You're going to need the whole roster. And but they're playing pretty efficient right now.
Nebraska 90, Wisconsin 60, the final score. Nebraska 10-0 on the men's side for the first time since 1977-78. Jay Sai, a college basketball statistician here from OptiStats, tweet this out. Division I schools in the last 10 seasons to have both their men's and women's basketball teams start 10-0. Tennessee last year, Arizona in 21-22, Michigan in 2021, Villanova in 2017-18, their second championship year, and this year it's Nebraska. Both programs off to a 10-0 start. Women open up conference play with the win over Penn State, and Nebraska open it up with the win over Wisconsin. Really good time to be a Husker basketball fan right now as you're waiting on pins and needles for volleyball tomorrow night. You're waiting for football versus Utah. There's something to do. It's getting down to Pinnacle Bank Arena.
Yeah, I mean, it's about that time. It's about to be bowl season. And obviously, you know, the Lady Huskers are going to do their thing on the volleyball court. And then obviously you get, you know, Saturday early matinee, right? And then it's onward up from there. So the as this thing goes on, the pressure, I think, cranks up. And that's where you want to see the best of the best cream rise to the top.
It has risen to the top so far for Nebraska men's basketball. It took some time. Basketball program's gotten here. Can they sustain? We'll see, but they did get here. Does Nebraska have the leeway to be as patient with football? Same sense of urgency or more urgency in that sport? We'll talk about that in light of men's basketball success next here on Old School.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Right along here on Old School, brought to you as always by the Mercado, by Certified Piedmont Special Ingredients and Butcher Shop. Three Lincoln locations and one up in Omaha. Austin Orman and Jay Foreman here with you. Jay, we'll kind of parlay our Nebraska men's basketball conversation here into one about Nebraska football as well. Because when you think about how long it seemed to take Fred Hoiberg to get things going at Nebraska, you suffer through a 7-win season, a 7-win season, and a 10-win season. Of course, COVID comes into play at the end of Fred Hoiberg's first year. It takes 2 years to kind of crawl out of that hole until Nebraska gets up to that 500 record and then turns the corner into the 8 seed, the NCAA tournament appearance the next year. Is it fair to give football coaches that sort of runway? Is it fair to say, yeah, you can have, you know, 5 years before your first, let's say, college football playoff appearance for Nebraska? Obviously, the field has expanded. Because I think there's the argument to be made that no, you can't afford to give football that any specific coach or, you know, program that runway, because there's money, there's investment, you got to get it up and rolling. But the flip side of that would be, yeah, because we are investing so much in it, because the rosters and coaching staffs are bigger, maybe you do need a little bit more time to turn a bigger program around. Is there the same standard for the sense of urgency and really I think the sense of patience between the men's basketball program, how long it gave Fred Hoiberg, and what maybe Husker fans or, you know, even Troy Dannon should expect or, you know, give Matt Rhule in terms of leeway to get to that point?
Yeah, I mean, there's no like right answer. I think the time clock with football, unfortunately, is a little bit faster just because of the dynamics around it. I mean, I think just by the history comparing Nebraska basketball and Nebraska football, as far as the need and the have to be good is different.
Much different.
So, yeah. So your timeline's different. Now I think you need to exercise more patience because number one, the coaching pool isn't as deep as it used to be 5 or 10 years ago, because a lot of the good coaches are now on TV commentating or being analysts, you know, in studio. I think the athletes are different, and I think the dynamics are different. And so you got to be a little bit more patient, but then also you got to see some progress. I think the biggest thing that Fred did that football teams can do, and you probably see it maybe with like, obviously everybody wants to look at Kirk Cignetti, but you can even look at schools like South Florida and all that where they have an identity. Fred was able to identify what he wants and reshape the program identity wise, what you want in a Husker basketball player. So that's what you need in football. You got to, you know, obviously you have identity, you got to stick to it, you got to build off of it, and you got to adjust some, but you want to make sure you have a good foundation. So I always say you need to exercise patience. If you see some growth, and you should know, they know more than anybody else because they are inside those walls. And so, you know, you got to, you know, kind of, you know, ride it as long until, you know, they decide to make a decision to keep it going or not.
And to be completely fair to your main point, yes, they're not the same sport, right? The timelines are just naturally different in some of those. But I do think we have to be fair to Matt Rhule as well, in a probably more scrutinized job, obviously, for Nebraska football, one of the most scrutinized in the country, regardless of level. Just looking at the first 3 years, Matt Rhule has clearly already accomplished more and shown more signs of progress than Fred Hoiberg did. You know,
to
get from a 4-8 team that went, you know, 1-2 with Scott Frost, 3-6 with Mickey Joseph, so same winning percentage under both guys that final year, to get that team to 5-3 entering November in year one and kind of that transition year. Yeah, going 0-4 in November, it hurt, but that was a step in the right direction. To get to the first bowl game, sure, maybe you want more out of the program in year two, but they got to a bowl game, they won it, and then you win one more regular season game this year. It feels like maybe not the step forward the fans wanted, but again, just comparing football and basketball in just the first 3 years, if it takes Matt Rhule 7 years or, you know, to get to the college football playoff, or 6 years to get to the college football playoff, seems like it probably will have taken too long. But I think it's a great point by you that, yeah, just even though he has maybe accomplished more in the first 3 years, that timeline's accelerated because of other, you know, kind of extenuating factors outside of Matt Rhule's control and outside of Fred Hoiberg's control.
Yeah, I think the Kirk Signetti thing is obviously, this is why you see a lot of turnover. And it played a part in probably what happened up there in Ann Arbor as well. Everybody who thinks that you get a new coach, then all your problems are solved. Your problems are only solved when everything is there's continuity and clarity top to bottom. That's the top of the university. Then you stop at the sports teams on down. Michigan obviously has some issues. So it played out yesterday, and it's been playing out on the field. So, you know, I mean, there's definitely progress from year one to year three. I think when you look at it, maybe a game behind this year where you would, I guess, be somewhat satisfied. 8-4 versus 7-5. Obviously, you would like to think with, you know, Dylan coming back and the offensive weapons we had, that we would have been able to maybe even exceed that. So, you know, you still took a step in the right direction. You wanted to take a big leap. And so now you have to go back and that's what he's probably trying to do, is kind of just figure out where he wants this program to go. And so you got to have some patience. You know, and on the flip side, I don't think football is very hard. It's not. And winning's not very hard. Now, the thing is, you kind of fight this kind of unknown, like, character of coaching. You know, like, how hard can you coach kids? Do you even have enough time to coach kids? Because you got to re-recruit your roster. You got to recruit not only the next year, you got to keep your eye on the portal. Then you got to recruit, you know, 2 years from now, all that stuff. So it's constant, you know, the goal line is moving. But, you know, I think at a place like Nebraska, you know, I wouldn't say it's easy, but I also think that you can be pretty consistent pretty quick. Now, the parity is there. All right. So, you know, what you're getting now, or where you're at, say, before this, it's a byproduct of some bad decisions a long time ago, which you can't change.
Yeah.
And college football changed. So you made some bad decisions when college football changed drastically, when there was more networks, and you went totally out of character with what you're doing. And that's fine. At that time, you thought it was the right move. And then you missed on some couple things. You had a lot of turnover upstairs. And so, you know, right now you just got to really, I wouldn't say start over, but build the program the way you want it. You got to have some patience, but then also you got to have the sense of urgency too.
Well, let's get to our starter, Heyman Jewelers text line, 402-464-5685. One-Eyed Ray does bring up the Signetti example. He says, unfortunately, for Rhule, Signetti has changed what people think about that time frame. To me, Jay, it's not so much that Kurt Signetti said it has to be overnight. To me, the more important and impressive part about what Kurt Signetti did is that he nailed the follow-up and has been even better.
It's a validation. He came out in his first major golf tournament and ended the tournament with a double, with a birdie. Mm-hmm. And when he needed to make it a birdie on 18 the next year, he hit a double eagle.
Yeah.
But there's other guys that have done well in their first year and really turned some things around. You've seen some guys actually make adjustments in their program. Lane Kiffin, defensive wise, they're a lot better than they have been in the past. It can be done. I think sometimes when you're always looking at what other people do and then you're not really taking care of your business, that's where you can really stymie your progress. So I think you always pause people to say, look, Indiana has never been good at football. Never, up until now. They've never been good at football.
No.
They've never even put forth any, like, resources or thinking about football. They had the COVID year with Allen, and then all his NFL talent left.
Yeah.
And then you're stuck with nothing. Mm-hmm. And he kind of, you know, what Kirk Cignetti was been able to do, and this is not taking anything away from Cignetti, is that the foundation was still there. I mean, Tom Allen did some good things, mm-hmm. and he did a lot with a little, with a very little support. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as soon as he left, they was like, all right, we're going to put some money into the program. So sometimes you can say, well, if you can do it at Indiana, you should be able to do it in Nebraska. There is truth to that, but then there's a lot of, there's not a lot of truth into it, because you don't know the dynamics of the inner workings of Indiana versus Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Like, these dudes at Indiana, they're just like, oh, we just lucked into this decision. It's no different than Colorado last year.
Right.
Colorado the first year. They're making all that money. Now you got to get there. Now, Kirk Cignetti has always been a winner. And so, you know, Nebraska just got to find their own way and find their pathway. Indiana will face being hunted. They are hunting people right now.
Yeah.
They haven't had it turned around on them. The boomerang hasn't came. But they'll be battle tested and be ready for it, because they – you know, have a good eye for talent. They have a little, when you've always had to kind of do a lot with a little, you know, kind of what, you know, who you are and what you're looking for to run your deal. So they've been able to kind of have some little watering holes as far as recruiting and have eyes on guys way in the future.
They really have. Back to our starter at Heyman Jewelers text line we go. So 44 at 24 says, to be fair, Matt Rhule's never had a year 4 or 5. It's fair to see if he can prove it after year 3 and Bill. That's not exactly true. He did get 4 years at Temple. They went 10-4 in 2015 and then 10-3 in 2016. Reached the top 25, lost their bowl game both times. Then it was 3 years at Baylor, and he's through 3 years here at Nebraska. Let's go to Mike. I think for most fans, it's not the win-loss record for Husker football. It's the losses and how Nebraska loses that really bother most fans. So it is the win-loss record at the end of the day, Mike, but I do think there's that other part as well, Jay. But I think that's kind of a cop-out as well. You know, it's how Nebraska loses. Well, don't lose pretty. Start winning ugly, you know? Yeah, because a loss is a loss at the end of the day, and they pile up, and I get it. You don't like to see Nebraska steamrolled by Penn State and Iowa in back-to-back weeks after having that happen to him against Minnesota. But you can't say it's about how Nebraska loses and then say it's not about the win-loss record. Because if it's more about, oh, just, you know, be competitive, just be close, well, we're back to the best 3-9 team of all time again.
Yeah, well, I think it's everybody can be right. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You could play a really good game and you get just beat by a better team on that day. Right? Mm-hmm. So you can see it. Now, what you're saying is you want the aesthetically pleasing is, you know, you just want that. What they're saying is you want the team to embody just Nebraska people. You want a tough, disciplined people. A lot of these fans are too young. They even remember when, you know, old guys like myself played. So that's what they're looking for. They want to see that, hey, look, you're getting, and also there's a factor, you're getting paid a lot of money. Or some guys are getting paid a lot of money. You got to expect, and you should be welcoming the pressure of playing well. There's a lot of that goes into it. Some of it's like false, you know, expectations coming off the off season, and now everybody's talking about you and stuff like that. And it's obviously runs rampant around here. It's a highly covered team. And, you know, it is kind of way you lose, and or it's more or less how you play.
Yeah.
It's how you play. Do you play tough? Do you do the things? Is there adjustment? You know, you just got to get that together. So, but then on the other side, you got to give Coach Rhule, you know, credit. He saw some weaknesses that he felt like there's weaknesses at. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent, he made decisions and you move on from there. And, you know, so if they get some new blood in here and these guys are, you know, really kind of get their things, you know, like we talked about yesterday on Whiteboard Wednesday, San Diego State did a really good job on the edges and allowed the guys to play downhill. Okay, then you remedy against the run, right? But then that once you like kind of remedy that problem or have a plan, an action plan for that, you've got to be able to rush the passer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you've got to be able to legitimately cover.
Yeah.
Because the guys that we're going to be covering this year is way different than we covered last year.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's on notice. the defenses that we play next year are better than the defenses that we played overall top to bottom than we played this year. So everybody has to approach it that we got to get better. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, you'll be just fine. Then you won't have to worry about how you're playing. You're just playing. Mm-hmm. And then it's like a team has
to play.
Well,
you have the standard.
Yeah, and a team is going to have to play their best game to beat you. Mm-hmm. And then when you play your best game, you'll be able to beat their best. And so that's what they're trying to get to. Now, obviously, you know, as you go along this thing, you know, people want it sooner than later. And Kirk Cignetti has put pressure everywhere. These like Florida, you know, making moves, Florida State wishing they could fire Mike Norvell, all that stuff, even at Kentucky, everybody, it's a byproduct of Cignetti.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking, okay, if we just keep, you know, just firing it, we'll get that. And, you know, we'll even get that small little capsule of 2 years. They're willing to bet, you know, do that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How they go about it and what they're willing to deal with is a lot there. What do you think LSU is doing? They're trying to get a splash higher. They're thinking like, whoa, Lane comes here. He gets these athletes with these, you know, this defense.
Ole Miss gets good athletes, but not LSU athletes.
Right. Just, you know. Mm-hmm. Lane gets off the plane, the number one player in the nation is waiting for him. Mm-hmm. You know, but what people forget, when you're getting on white lines, that don't matter,
right?
And that's where a lot of people really have a hard time adjusting to what's called competition and actually playing the game,
and also adjusting to maybe the new day and age of college athletics. In some ways, we have both sides of that here. So Waverly Jim says, "I think the Nebraska brass is sick of the revolving door here." And Kent says, "I appreciate Matt Rhule making changes. This is the third defensive coordinator, second OC, second special teams coordinator in 3 years. Coach Osborne used to always talk about how fortunate he was that he had such continuity with his staff. Seems like Matt Rhule didn't necessarily hire the right people out of the gate, or they weren't available. And so some of those changes must have needed to be made." I'll say this, in that you can do too much change, and you can use the changes an excuse for, oh, sorry, well, we had new coaches in the door. What did you expect? You know, they need a year under their belts. They didn't know their guys. But that can't be an excuse anymore. When new players come in the door every year, with the transfer portal and NIL the way that it is, even with coach movement. So, Waverly, Jim, if you're talking about Nebraska brass being sick of player movement, they got to get used to it. But I would also say the same thing in terms of coaches. Because if you want to look at a program that's had a bunch of coach movement, look at Nebraska volleyball. Look how many assistants John Cook lost in the span of 20 years. Yeah. It was not the same staff. Look how many offensive coordinators Nick Saban turned through as he was winning in defensive coordinators too. Yeah. You know, winning seven titles. It happens. It's part of the game when you are a stable program with good direction that continues to win games, right? Sure, you like continuity, but that's so idealistic in this day and age. It is so hard to come by. That's why Kurt Cignetti being able to bring as much of his staff with him from James Madison to Indiana, there wasn't just that one stop for those guys. They've been together even longer. When you can get it, it's great. You have to shoot for it, but you can't expect it. And because you can't expect it, you can't use the lack of continuity as a crutch for, hey, this is why we're not successful. Give us more time. You have to show progress and that, hey, you're improving while you build that continuity, while you build out that standard. And get whoever's in the door, players or coaches, to live up to it, abide by it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you need a lot more continuity when you're at like the Toledos and Akron, because you're trying to really, you can build a program there. And then when you build a program and you get a big, you know, obviously promotion, you go from there. When you have a lot of coaching turnover and you're winning, nobody cares. Then it's like, you know, when a coach, like, Tony White left, you know, what for another opportunity, what he felt was as good or maybe better in Nebraska. He had some, you know, whatever his reasons were to go. Mm-hmm. You can't fault him from there because the defense had, you know, been, you know, pretty good. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, Coach Rhule decided to, you know, bring in Eckler as a special team. So he made a couple pivots. So, you know, not all coaching changes or player changes are created equal.
Which is what Gorilla Bear says as well. It's a revolving door when coaches are taking better jobs is different than having to fire coaches.
Yeah, and just kind of depends on how you look at it. And sometimes you got to, you know, maybe some guys morph into or out of roles, you know, which is suits them and you got them in the program. So, you know, I think the biggest thing that you just need to focus on is just winning. That's it. Just winning. Every single day, everything that you do has to be about winning.
Yeah.
That's coaches and players, staff, or whatever else they have going on. It has to be about winning. If that is done, then you'll win. And then when coaches leave, you'll just be happy for them, because then you'll be, you know, you have a good coaching tree. And that's what ultimately what you want as a coach.
Yeah.
And It really wasn't advantageous back when Coach Osborne was coaching to go anywhere, because this is the best job and there wasn't a lot of money when you're coaching. Now there's a lot of money. If I'm a coordinator or a linebacker coach, if I'm a linebacker coach and I want to be a coordinator and I can go make twice or three times as much what I'm making, and then I'm on my way to try to be a head coach, you know, that's a tip your hat to the original head coach. And in this case, it would be, you know, Matt Rhule.
Right.
That's what he ain't going to stop you from going on and do that. So I think, you know, coaching a revolving door with players, you just got to be able to coach your style. You got to be able to coach the way you want. And if you're paying the guys, they either get coached or they sit on the bench.
Right. Period. Those are your options.
Yeah. I mean, you're already getting paid. That's not my fault. They brought you in here. My job is to coach. Mm-hmm. If you can't play hard, I got to get you to play hard. I got to have a standard. If you're not meeting that, then we're just going to have some uncomfortable conversations. That doesn't mean that you're not going to play ever again. Imagine you ain't going to be playing as much as you like. You got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, just like it is outside.
77-73-15-62. Appreciate you guys chiming in on the conversation as well. Sorry we couldn't get to you. Husker Stew will address that here coming up. Thomas and Lincoln, Ben, stay tuned. We'll get to you as well. This is Old School. He's Jay. I'm Austin. We'll be back to wrap up hour one in a sec.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Thirsty Thursday is just around the corner. Short one here to wrap up hour one of Old School. Jay, it's official. Billy Napier to James Madison. Really good landing spot for him. Of course, he was a hot commodity from when he got his first gig at Louisiana. Raging Cajun 7-7 in his first year. Won bowl games the next 2 years, and then double-digit wins, actually, the final 3 years that he was there, 11-3, 10-1, and 12-1. Got the Raging Cajuns as high as 15th and 16th in the poll his final 2 years. Underwhelming, perhaps, tenure at Florida, but a guy with SEC experience who's been a good mid-major coach before. I think James Madison got a guy that's probably at the right level for him.
Yeah, as a head coach. Yeah, I think he'll do well there. I mean, obviously the standard's pretty high there. Yeah. Expectations are probably out of this world. Considering their last two coaches were there Kirkson Eddie was there for a little while, and then the last coach was there for like a year or so. I think it's a good landing spot. I think it's good for him to get back into coaching. I think he's probably a better coach than what, you know, led out there in Florida. I think there's, you know, some factors that were out of his hands that led to that. It's a learning experience for him, and I wouldn't say he'll never get up to the Power Four again, but I think if he does well there, he'll sneak into another Power Four, and I think it's a good match for him.
Would you rather be the head coach at James Madison or North Dakota State?
Where is James Madison at?
Was it like Lynchburg, Virginia? Harrisonburg? Harrisonburg, I want to say.
Man, I guess Virginia. I guess
James, Harrisonburg, yes. Harrisonburg.
James Madison, I guess. I mean, you can't go wrong with either. North Dakota State is solid, too.
So I'm saying. Different talent bases available, but different level.
North Dakota, they'll get some kids out of Florida. They recruit.
They do?
Yeah. I'll just like, hey, what
really, they just go across the border to wherever the Lances are in Minnesota and say, yep, there's another one. You're coming to us.
He's from like southern Minnesota. he ain't.
Not from your neck of the woods.
No. But they got a good bloodline, though.
Hey.
North Dakota State probably. It probably fits more like what I'm used to. Just line them up, knocking. I mean, that's a program right there.
Yeah.
You got to be tough, and they put guys out, and they're always in the mix. That's probably, but you can't go wrong with either. South Dakota State either.
Yeah, I mean, FBS versus FCS, but hey, still kind of that Cinderella versus the big bad boy on the block. Just
work your way up, man.
Yeah. You can get wherever you want to go from either place.
Oh, yeah. Quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big time job.
You should want to go very quickly to Myers Cork and Bottle. We'll tell you what's going on down there at the shop Uncle Kev's in for Thirsty Thursday.